Today is May 3rd, 2023. I'm Jen Widener with the Jeffersonville Township Public Library, conducting interviews for Some Like It Hot, Tales from the Firehouse. I'm here today with Captain Josh Kemp of the Jeffersonville Fire Department. Thank you for being here today.
My pleasure.
So everyone has a story to tell, and I want to give Jeffersonville firefighters the chance to share their story. So how long have you been with the department?
I am in my 23rd year. It will be December 15th, 2000 is when I hired on.
23 years. Wow.
Yep.
I don't feel like we're even that old.
I feel old.
I've known Josh and his family for a long time. So.
Oh, believe me, I feel my age every morning when I get out of bed.
Before becoming a firefighter, you were in the military. What branch were you in?
I was in the Air Force.
That's what I thought. And where were you stationed?
I was in Texas for a short while. I was in California for a couple of years. And I was in Germany for a couple of years. And then there was a few stops in between. I was in Korea for a while. I was in Hungary for a while. Yeah, that's about it, actually.
All over the place.
Yeah.
So what made you want to become a firefighter?
Actually, I never really gave it a lot of thought until after I got out of the service. I guess towards the end of my service time, I started considering possibly firefighting. But as a kid, I never thought about it. I don't know. Nobody in my family ever did it. Nobody ever volunteered. It's just one of those ideas. I kind of just came out of clear blue sky, I suppose, right towards the end of my military time. And then when I came back to Jeff, I started the process of attempting to get hired, which takes a couple of years. And that was it. But there was
wasn't like a plan you had. So if you weren't a firefighter, what do you think you would be doing?
My dad had the heating air business for decades. I suppose I could have done that. I never really took an interest in that. And I did it off and on for years. I don't know. I guess the heating air business. Probably would have done that. But as it is, I'm glad that things worked out the way they
did. Right. You're where you need to be.
I wouldn't change a thing.
What are some of the challenges of your job?
And this is just for people in general, anybody considering going in, you're going to see death, and you're going to see a lot of it. I mean, you're going to see it in all shapes or forms. Sometimes it's really ugly. Sometimes it's not so ugly, but nevertheless, you're going to see tons of death. And what makes our job kind of unique outside of like the hospital environment is I'm doing CPR on somebody's wife of 50 years on the living room floor in front of her spouse, in front of her kids, out in the yard, out beside the swimming pool. It's very intense, those runs. And you don't really get used to them. And you're just going to see a lot of that. That's tough. Not everybody's cut out for that.
I think it would be scary if you did get used to them.
I suppose you may kind of develop like a veneer, like a defense mechanism where, you hear your gal's humor of psychologically coping with it. But it, for me, and especially the older I get a physical reaction where I get I guess they call it cortisol, where you get like this cortisol surge, the adrenaline, just where it's just off the charts and you're performing, you're trying to save somebody, and then they're loaded up in the ambulance and they're going to the hospital, and then I'm sitting back on that fire truck and it's just this dump of chemicals or whatever in your brain, and you're almost shaking. I don't think you can't get used to that, and I think you only got so much of that in you, and I think everybody's capacity for dealing with that is different. I think there are some people, maybe 10, 15 years of that, and that's their limit. And there may be other people can do it 25, 30 years. I'm in my 23rd, and far and away, that's what bothers me more than anything on the job. You'll see some really nasty things. You'll smell some really nasty things. those are the toughest parts of the job for sure. No doubt about it.
So how long does it take to get used to working 24-hour shifts?
It was not that bad for me. I think it was harder on my wife in the beginning than it was me. My kids, it's all they've ever known. So to them, I mean, because they were born after I'd already been there. Amy definitely had more trouble with it than I ever did. But she's to the point now where she's so accustomed to it. It's
your job.
It's all you know. It's all you know. And actually, if you factor in driving and your commute back and forth, it's more than 24 hours. It could be 25 or 26 hours. And that being said, I enjoy it. I would rather work 24 hours on a Monday, Wednesday, and a Friday than do just a regular 9-to-5 Monday through Friday. Because I'm still that Tuesday and that Thursday, and then our Saturday and our Sunday. Our schedule, to me, is one of the biggest perks of the job. I love it. I wouldn't change it at all. Anybody complains about our schedules,
they may not be in the right
field. They need to. I don't know what the problem is.
So, what are some of the best parts of your job?
Those runs I was speaking of that are bad, sometimes they turn out well. You know, not always, but when they do, I mean, it's indescribable. I mean, that's it. That's what it's all about. It's and that has happened. I've had some, and I gotta be careful about privacy and things like that. And I wasn't involved in this, actually. I was off the day it happened. But we had a run where a fella was out. But let's just say my crew on a day I wasn't there saved the guy. They performed. They kicked ass. And they saved the guy with like very little deficits. I mean, that's that like 1 in 100 run. And I know for a fact, every one of those guys, they hang their hat on that. We still talk about that. You can't take that away. That, you know, everybody has struggles in life, and sometimes they may get down or whatever. Those guys involved in that run that day will always and can always know there's somebody walking around.
Because of them.
Because of them.
Yeah, they saved a life.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. So the good, the worst parts of the job and the best parts of the job are so closely, they're so close. It's just kind of hanging by thread. I mean, it's, and that's just part of it. There are good things too in that actually, if you're with a crew that you really get along with and you have some chemistry with, you're living together a third of the time. So, you know, that can be enjoyable. You can have some fun, you know.
And which station are you at?
I'm on Allison Lane, okay. Station 5. And I've been there, I don't know exactly how long. Probably, I was there for the first year it was open, left, and been back there 8 or 9 years, I guess, now. And I'd like to finish there. I love that house. I love that district. I love that house. That's the place to be.
Did you guys do the anything related to, like, the river, right?
Yes. We have the fireboat, and so we are involved with any incidents that occur out on the river. Yes. And that would be technically be part of technical rescue, and there's a lot of facets of technical rescue, and that is, at least in the city of Jeff, that is far and away the most common. We're out there a fair amount. I mean, it's not a super rare occasion.
You guys are all trained for that, right?
Yes. Yeah. And like a lot of things, we have certain individuals who are, I mean, specifically my crew, I have 3 guys under me on my crew who have grown up on that river. Families that were really into boating. And I lean on them. I didn't grow up on that river, but they did. And their knowledge of that river, their knowledge of boating, is top notch.
You're not afraid to hop out there and do it.
No, yeah, I love
hesitation.
It.
It's
I feel as the captain, I lean on him heavily, and it's very comforting knowing that I can count on those guys and we can go out and get the job done. And we're out there a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting ready to be boating season, so
yes it is.
So I know there's no like typical work day, but like, what are some things that you do every time you're at the house, firehouse? Like when you get there in the morning, like what do you
see? Oh, a lot of us have a routine. I don't wear a uniform in. So like the very first thing I do is I take whoever I'm relieving, the officer from the day before, I'll take his gear off the truck, just stack it next to the truck, put my gear on, do a radio test. I check the CAD. I check my thermal imaging camera. I check my air pack. And at this point, usually I haven't even got my uniform yet. But I get all that done, and which takes 15, 20 minutes. And then I go in to, I have my own little bedroom, and change in my uniform, and then I start a small little load of laundry where I wash my uniform from the previous day. That is my routine. So every day from like 07 to 7:30, I'm basically doing the exact same thing every day. And then you start breakfast, and which is nothing overly complicated. Eggs. Basically eggs every day, and some coffee. And then we settle in. Lately, we've been doing a lot of medical training, which is the vast majority of what we do is medical runs. So a lot of medical training. And me specifically, I have my first responder certification. I have to renew that in June, so I've got to catch up on a lot.
You're studying up, and yeah.
Yep, you have enough hours for that. And then we're just making runs throughout the day. We check the truck. We're doing a lot of stuff with the truck. Yesterday we tested hose. This time of year, and I suspect Jeff Fire is not unique in this regard. I think a lot of departments in the springtime start testing all their hose. But yes, we were doing some hose testing out on the pad yesterday with the truck. And we go and we fill it up and make sure all the equipment's running right. And you're just kind of waiting on the alarm.
So, I mean, you could like immediately get there and have a call.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
I mean,
and
get ready to leave the next day and have
a
call.
Well, that's when things, and I think we're all the same in this regard, where there's probably nothing worse than catching that run right before a shift change. Because you don't, rarely are you going to have the crew integrity. You know, it's if I catch a run at 3:00 in the afternoon, I know exactly who's going to be on the truck to be my crew. I catch a run at 6:50 in the morning, and my relief hasn't showed up yet. I may be getting on the truck, and I might have my sergeant, but maybe not my private or my lieutenant. It's a hodgepodge of
whoever's
the oncoming
there, right?
Crew and the offgoing crew, and that run could be a fire. That run could be a wreck. It could be anything.
Yeah.
And I've had them all. I've had the fire at 6:50. I've had the bad wreck at 6:50. I've had the bad medical run at 6:50. Those are a hassle.
I mean, you go.
But what are you going to do?
That's your job. I mean,
yeah,
right,
oh, yeah,
you
yeah,
go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I haven't met a firefighter yet that'd be like, oops, no, not my call. That's not how firefighters are.
No.
The few that I know, like,
that truck's rolling every time.
Yep.
I can assure the taxpayers of Jeff that if you call the 911 and it's a firefighting related run, we will be there 100% of the time.
So what are some misconceptions about firefighting? You know, we have all these TV shows and movies that show things one way, and I'm sure that's not how the real world
is. It is not glamorous. And those movies, those shows, and I don't watch a lot of them. My wife loves Chicago Fire, so I have seen that. I kind of picked up on that, like just through a little osmosis. It's not glamorous. It's kind of gritty. There's times it's kind of ugly. Times it could be boring. You might have a slow day.
Like on those shows, they're like going on calls all the time.
Well, not just calls, but these really exotic, crazy, once in a lifetime calls. And a coworker of mine, Marcus Wren, I work with Marcus. We came up with this term. We called them one percenters, because the vast majority of your runs all kind of fall under certain categories, and they're all common or similar. And then you have your one percenters that are your crazy runs that you never even thought of this. How could this possibly happen?
Right.
The one percenter run. These TV shows, they make one percenter runs 99% of the time.
It's rarely like
these crazy fires. The orphanage of full of blind kids that had a nuclear bomb go off inside. That stuff doesn't.
Right. Or these crazy medical calls that they're showing that you're just like,
yeah,
what in the world?
That's not the job.
That's but if they showed how it really was, nobody would watch the show.
Exactly. The big one we used to laugh about with Backdraft specifically was how great the visibility was inside these buildings where there's fires. You can't see anything.
That's what
you can't
Jason
make,
said,
you
yeah.
You can't make a show about it. So Hollywood's like, we can't make a really totally realistic fire scenario because the viewer will have nothing to view unless they want to see just smoke right in their face.
Right.
Because you're going by feel.
That's why there's no fire reality shows, I guess, because
it
would just be a blank screen.
It wouldn't be the best viewing. Just a whole lot of weird, loud noises.
So how does firefighting affect your home life?
I can only speak for myself, and I'm just one part of our home life, but I'm not sure that's really affected ours. I can't really think of, it's all my boys have ever known.
And your wife's a nurse, so
she's
she knows,
a nurse,
you
so
know.
She can understand the, what I was speaking of earlier about the medical side of things and the death. She totally gets that. So I don't think it's affected this bad in any way.
It's just the normal for
yep.
you all.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. For sure.
Can you think of, like we've talked about, you know, serious calls. Like, can you think of any like humorous calls or something funny that's happened?
Oh, man. I guarantee I'll think of something later. On the drive home, probably.
I heard you may have gotten a call about a bird in a tree.
I was on one of those a long time ago. I'm talking like my first year or two on the job. I can remember we had an exotic bird. I want to say it was down around Walnut Ridge somewhere. Frank, Fairview, Magnolia, one of those streets right in there where an exotic bird got out. And I can remember seeing the bird because I ended up being I drew the short straw. I was a rookie. I was on the ladder. And I remember approaching that bird, and it was bright green. It was like this pretty exotic bird. Like I was going to catch this bird. I just did what I was told, though. And got probably within 8 feet or so, and he flew away. But God, I totally forgot about that run. I haven't thought about that run in a long time. Funny runs.
I mean, you all still get, like, my cat's up in the tree kind of calls.
We do get those. We do get those. And on a serious note, as an officer, those can be some really challenging runs. Because I'm not necessarily a cat person, but I got dogs. And I'm very, very sympathetic and empathetic to the plight of, hey, my cat's in the tree. My little boy or little girl, that's your cat. But then I have to weigh... I sent somebody up there on a ladder. They fall off that ladder. So there is, we do our best to help with those. And sometimes we can, sometimes we can't. I have to, I wasn't on the run, but I heard about it. We had a cat in a tree downtown once, and a fellow went up, one of our guys went up on a ground ladder and damn near fell off that ladder. Came really close to falling off that ladder. Would have been like a 20, 25-foot fall down to a sidewalk for a cat. So I don't want to sound heartless. I don't want to sound heartless here. But that is something we have to weigh.
And there's no cat skeletons in trees.
I've always heard that.
So.
That's the saying is you'll never see a skeleton, but I'm not so sure the cat doesn't die and fall out of a tree. I don't know. It's just that's a conundrum. It really is a conundrum as an officer that you're probably your ordinary citizen doesn't think about, but haven't been there. I've had runs that we could help, and I've had runs where I've had to say, I'm sorry, we can't help. And I hate those runs.
Because, I mean, ultimately, you have to make sure your crew's safe.
I can't send a guy up on a ladder. I understand the importance of that cat to somebody, but I can't send somebody up on a ladder in a very precarious situation and have them fall and wind up in room 9 over at U of L. Have their career be over. or maybe even dead over a cat.
Right.
So that's just, and they don't teach you that in textbooks. You can find all the firefighting textbooks in the world, and there's no chapter on that. That's just where you kind of, you're kind of about to see your pants, and you have to make a decision.
And I'm sure there's a lot of things like
that. And so far, I've never had anybody give me any gruff or hard time. They've been very understanding.
They understand.
Knock on wood, hopefully it stays that way.
Yep. So, what do you do for your mental health? Like, I know this can be a very taxing job and very, not just physical, but mental and emotional, too. Like, what do you do to...
I talk to my wife a lot. I kind of unload on her sometimes. Sometimes you just have to go on a rant. There's a lot of awareness with that now. And that, not just in fire, but police, military. There's an enormous amount of awareness now with post-traumatic stress. And a lot of guys turn to crawling to a bottle. It's a big problem. I just think you have to have somebody you can talk to. Maybe you're on that crew, and I'm on a crew like this, where we have pretty good chemistry, and we can just talk to each other at work.
Because you all understand. You understand
whatever's bothering
happened
me.
Happened or...
99% of the time, whatever's bothering me, the guys I work with, they just experience the exact same thing. So what a particular run that really might have me down, I'll give you a specific example. We had a baby, it's probably been 5-6 months ago now, but we had a baby that died. And my crew that particular day was, I had my regular private who happens to have a 3-year-old daughter and a toddler son, and then I had a transfer from another house who has an infant son. And we are doing CPR on this baby, and we ended up en route to the hospital. I wasn't. I stayed behind. But Ben and William made the run, and William had that baby on his lap the entire ride into the hospital. So when that run, at the end of that run, we're all kind of in a dark place. William was in a really dark place. Because he's looking at this baby, and he's seeing his kid.
Absolutely.
So you have to talk to somebody about that. I don't care how tough you are. And we talked a lot that day. And the department, I was very proud of the department that day. We got back to fives, and in about 10 minutes, we had our chaplain. We had our chief. They were all there.
Mm.
It's like, hey, how are you guys handling this? They took the truck out of service. So you lean on each other. Hopefully you got somebody at home you can talk to. God knows there's a lot of negative things you can do to try to deal with it.
Absolutely.
But it is we've gotten a lot better in that respect compared to the old days. Because in the old days, those guys, I don't think they talked.
You didn't talk. No. It wasn't the manly thing to do. No, you didn't talk. But now we're seeing that such a high suicide rate.
Oh, it's terrible.
Terrible. Addiction rate.
And you are. You're spending a career. I spent 23 years. Every time I go out somewhere, somebody's having a bad day. The only variable is how bad a day. But I'm going out because something bad has happened to somebody. And it may be as simple as just a fender bender car wreck, or maybe a severe car wreck. It may be a relative having cardiac arrest in the living room. It may be a kid floating in a pool. It could be any number of things. And it just takes a little from you every time. And you wind up doing your whole career doing that. And just, you have to have some kind of a coping mechanism.
I mean, I take mental health very serious. And I do worry about first responders. And
it's a valid concern.
What you guys go through.
It's a valid concern.
Like I always
and
ask.
And that day, that's the best singular example I can think of that. That's now in the heat of the moment, you're performing. I gotta be careful about the specifics with that run. I'll just say this. We were out in a parking lot. We were out in the public. We weren't actually in somebody's home. We were out. When we encountered this child, we were out in the open. And I remember it was surreal to me that we are working this child, and right over here there's traffic, people driving. And it just, the contrast, people going about their business driving, and you got this crazy intense situation happening literally 40 feet over here that we're involved in. So, you know, we're doing what we do, and in the heat of the moment, you're performing. It's once it's over and the baby's in the hospital and you're getting back on the truck and you're going back in service, because it's 7:30 in the morning. We got 23 and a half hours still where we got to work. And that's when it really hits you. And you do. It is critical that you have hopefully some healthy, decent way to address that. Because if you bottle it up,
it's going to end bad.
It's going to get you.
It's going to end bad. And then the department does have resources for firefighters.
I'm telling you, that day, they were Johnny on the spot. We got back at the station, and our chaplain and our fire chief were basically waiting. Not waiting on us, but they were there in a matter of like 10 minutes. They were there. Mm-hmm. And we did. We talked and coped and it was impressive. And I didn't have to ask for any of this. I was the captain. I didn't have to ask for any of this. All this was taken care of for me. They just showed up. So.
Well, that's good to know that, you know, you do have the backing of your chief and
we absolutely
the higher-ups.
They are very, very much aware of what we're getting into out there and helping us.
I mean, the chief's been online.
He
knows.
Yes,
he's
for sure.
Dealt with all
absolutely.
Of it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what advice would you give anyone that wants to become a firefighter?
I could really get into nuts and bolts with there are certain qualities that a person absolutely must have, and they make sense. You have getting back to what I was talking about earlier, you're going to see a lot of death. If blood bothers you, bodily fluids bother you, gore bothers you, it's not for you. If you're afraid of heights, like you legitimately, heights really bother you, can't do it. And if you get claustrophobic in any respect, you don't like being closed in or having poor visibility, it's not for you. So that's all the physical stuff. The mental stuff is, you're going to, emotionally, you're going to encounter some bad, you know, you just know that it's coming, that you're going to see some, you're going to see some people having really bad days. I'm trying to get more practical now. Education-wise, we have changed a lot. The department I hired on to, very few guys, if any, had college degrees. The guys coming in the door now, I keep saying guys, the people coming in the door now, bottom large, a lot of them have college degrees. Now, I'm not sure what good that really does you there. I mean, the big thing there, I guess, from a mental perspective, is if you have a pretty good knowledge of building construction, a good idea of how a building is built, a good idea of how mechanical things work, know your way around hand tools. When somebody hands you a chainsaw at work, it's not the first time you ever touch one. Stuff like that's important. Ideally, we don't want a bunch of turds. We want good people coming in. I don't want somebody that's been in and out of trouble with the law, and good solid citizens. I'm kind of talking in circles here. just a good solid person. If you want to be a firefighter, just try to be a good solid citizen. Know that. It's can be technically complex. It's not just put water on fire. There's a lot of technical training we do, a lot of medical training we do. that's it. I saw that question earlier that Wheezy sent me, and that's probably the one I have the toughest time. That's a hard one to answer. I think, and I'm getting long-winded, we have 90-something people there, and there's probably 70 different reasons for most people being there. A lot of them's family. Mm-hmm. Some people might be there because it's a great pension. Some people might be there because it's a sense of service. Some people might just because the adrenaline. I don't know.
Was there anything else you'd like to share about your time as a firefighter?
I've enjoyed it. Wouldn't change a thing. Would not change a thing at all. That being said, I look forward to the day I can retire. It's, by and large, it's a young man's job, or a young person's job. I keep saying it. I'm sorry.
It's all right. You're fine.
It's a young person's job. It's, because when you work, you work.
People have the misconception y'all are sitting around taking naps all day.
Well, I'll say this. It's, our mornings tend to be pretty busy. And then you do get to a certain time of the day where you finished your training, you finished taking care of the truck or fixing whatever needs to be fixed, and then you're waiting on the alarm. So in that respect, it is kind of like life at home. We have TVs, we have a shower and a bathroom, we have a workout area, we have a back deck in my firehouse. A lot of times I like to go out and sit in a chair and just sit in the sun for 20 minutes and look at my phone or listen to a podcast or something. We do have parts of the day where we kind of unwind, and we're just waiting on the alarm.
Because you don't know what's going to happen when the alarm goes off.
Well, you don't know what kind of night you're going to have. We all have our own bed, just like you do at your house. And I go in there, and I lay down, and I go to sleep. And you really, really hope you get through your night without an alarm. And I'd say anymore, probably about an 80% chance you're not going to get through tonight. Maybe 75%. And that's tough. And that you never get used to that.
I was going to say, how could you ever get used to being woken up and like your adrenaline starts immediately as soon as
the
alarm goes.
Probably could have been my answer to a question earlier too. That is one of the unique challenges of the job. And I would actually challenge anybody to this: is if whatever it is you do for a living, let somebody come into your house, wake you up, and say, you need to do your job at a high level.
Now.
Or, okay, I'll give you 4 or 5 minutes because that's what we have because we're getting on the truck and we're going there. But in 4 or 5 minutes, I got to be able to perform. And it could be at 3:15 in the morning, 3:15 in the afternoon. That's a challenge. That is a challenge. And that is the job.
So did it take you a while to get used to having to, know that when you go to sleep, you may not get to sleep the whole time?
No, we're very aware of it. We're very aware of it. In fact, there's all these little sayings where I've turned into a person that goes to bed real early. I used to be a night owl, and I'm the polar opposite now. And I hear a lot now about how, in fact, there's even a, ask one of the other people to come in. There's a saying, it's like a rhyme about in bed before something, with the implication being, if you go to bed too early, you're going to run all night. That's, I don't care, I'm going to bed early.
You're going to bed, right.
But, that may be one of my least favorite parts of the job, really. I hate that. It's,
nobody wants to be having good sleep and well, all of a sudden you got to jump up and go.
And then I was younger and I didn't have to do the run sheet and everything when we got back. Or literally, we get back to the house and get just right back in bed. Being an officer, I actually got to go into the office, sit in front of a computer, and I got to write a run sheet about whatever it was we just did. And then I get to lay down. And it's just...
There could be another call coming.
Well, it could be another call, but usually what it is you lay back down and you're trying to fall back asleep, and it's really tough. A lot of that's contingent upon what you just did. If you did a run where it was very physical in nature, where you got a good sweat rolling and got your heart pounding, it's really tough to fall back asleep. And that would carry that. I could see where that would carry over to your home life for sure. You have these long nights where you're really struggling with sleep, and then you got to come home, and I could see where that would might be tough with young kids.
Oh, I forgot to ask. I know a lot of firefighters have other jobs besides firefighting. Do you have a
not anymore job? I did. I worked for Dad.
Okay.
Worked for Dad for 2000. Stuck it out with him probably till about 07-ish. It's when my boys started being born. My oldest was 05, my youngest was 07. And really got to be, and then my wife works. And we just kind of started weighing everything. And the extra income from my second job didn't really balance out with babysitting or trying to get stuff done around the house. I couldn't even find time to mow the grass. It's two young kids, so I stopped working the second job. Most guys do. I'll bet you, I'm rare. I'm a minority there for sure. I'd say 80% of our people work another job. It might be higher than that.
It's not because you aren't paid well.
No.
It's just because you have these days off, and we're just, as a society, we're used to, you must be working.
That is a byproduct of the schedule. Yeah. It's of having basically 20 solid days a month you're off. And 10 days a month, you're one-third of the time, you're at the firehouse. Two-thirds of the time, you're not at the firehouse.
But that time you're there, you don't know what you're going to be encountering.
You don't.
It could be a simple call, and you get there,
and you may have a quiet day. There's a lot of quiet days. I like those quiet days. I was younger. I wanted the juice. Those days are gone. I like the quiet days now, and we have them. But then you have some days that aren't. And a ton of people work second jobs. I'd say grass cutting. A lot of them cut grass. Mm-hmm. They work for themselves. That job's conducive to working for yourself, because there's a lot of employers that aren't going to really be understanding of our schedule. So you almost have to work for yourself. But, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for doing what you're doing. I'm curious to see what the final product's like. Hopefully I didn't make your transcription too hard.